John chapter 4, verses 13 through 15, give us the testimony of the woman at the well. Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Many people are thirsting in this world, for they know not what. Just like this lady's testimony, the cry of her soul, like so many around us, are crying out for something that will satisfy their thirst. But they're not sure where to look. If you'd like to turn now in your Bibles to Psalm 63, where we're going to be looking this evening. In this psalm, David speaks of his experience in the wilderness of Judah. And that wilderness experience brings out the best in him because of the thirst of his soul that he felt was not the thirst of a stranger groping around. He knows where his thirst will be satisfied. And he knows his way toward the Lord, the fellowship that is not that of a stranger, but one that he holds dear. So tonight we're going to look at Psalm 63. And of that thirst, the one who is thirsting but knows where to drink. That thirst is found, David states, in his God. O God, thou art my God. And that becomes the fountain that he drinks from, and the fountain that the rest of this psalm's message flows from. And there are three words that trace three themes through this psalm. That's one of those difficult tongue twisters. Three themes. The first word that traces a theme for us in this psalm is the word thirsteth. And so for verses 1 through 4, we're going to see how David's thirsting after the Lord is developed. And then the second word that follows a second theme in verse 5 is that word satisfied. How David's devotion led him to be satisfied in the Lord. And then in verses 9 through 11, we don't see this word, but the summary of those verses would be the word defended. So thirsteth, satisfied, and defended. David's thirst for the Lord, his satisfaction in the Lord, and his defense in the Lord. So let's look first of all, verses 1 through 4, at this thirsting of David. He thirsted just as the woman at the well, but he knew where to go to drink. O God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsteth for thee. My flesh longeth for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. Thus will I bless thee while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. So if you look up in the description of this psalm, it is a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. The desolation of his surroundings prompted David to think about the thirst in his own soul and gave him an even greater motivation to seek the one in whom his thirst is met. So there are four things that are developed in these verses about David's thirst. First of all, you'll see that he does this early. He does so early. The first thing could mean the first thing that he did in the morning. It could also mean his priority. This was the first thing that he considered. Like us, it should be the first thing that we do in the day, to claim our day for the Lord, just like claiming territory, to claim this day for the Lord. Turning to him rather than the idols, the objects of our devotion, our efforts to please ourselves that leave us restless. And then as well, we have Satan's temptation. Don't bother to pray when you don't feel like it. Hit the snooze. Take another 10. It was really unusual on Monday morning. I slept through my alarm and didn't wake up till 7:15. So that's not usual for me, to sleep through my alarm. But this was the first thing that he did. And there are times where we don't feel like praying. That just means that there is a greater need for us to thirst after the Lord and seek him in prayer. So his thirsting was the first thing. He does so early. Number two, he does so as he had done in the sanctuary. Verse 2, to see thy power and thy glory, so as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. Notice the words have seen. This was a former experience of David. But now, these were happier days, but now he is in the wilderness. And he thinks back on how God had revealed his power and glory. He was not now in the tabernacle. But his communion with the Lord wasn't dependent on where he was. His communion was entered by faith with the Lord, not through a place. No matter where he was or at what time, he could go there with boldness. And we are encouraged the same, even given greater encouragement, because we have the New Testament statements that we have access to God. Romans 5, verse 2, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. And Ephesians chapter 3, verse 12 says it this way, in whom we have boldness and access with confidence by the faith of him. Did you know that Nova Scotia has had its own gold rushes? It has had three, one at the end of the 1800s and then a second in the 1930s. Well, apparently, a doctor from Toronto and a lawyer who had relocated to Moose River were joint new owners of a gold mine in Moose River. And the way that they dug these gold mines wasn't to go straight down. They dug them at an angle. And there were two of these. One of them was called the Archibald Shaft. And the lawyer and the doctor and the timekeeper called Alfred Scadding had gone down on Easter Sunday of all days. So the mine had been empty that day. They'd gone through on Saturday and they'd heard some of the 30-year-old scaffolding creak. And some of the other miners, when they were trying to reopen the mine, said that the shoring pillars were actually bowed and cracked. But the three of them went down on that Sunday afternoon, only to be trapped when the shaft caved in behind them. And they were trapped 140 feet underground. So for 10 days, they were trapped. April 12th, to April 22nd, 1936. Now, could you imagine a less likely place that you could enter into communion with the Lord? I think if I was 140 feet underground for 10 days, that would be the primary place that I'd be seeking communion with the Lord. So David is no longer in the sanctuary, but even in his wilderness time, he is seeking after the Lord. He is thirsting for him as he had done in the sanctuary. Sometimes the Lord allows our comfortable lives to be upset, for our apple cart to be turned over, just so that we would be put in a place where we see our need to seek him and be drawn to him. Thirdly, verse 3, he does so because God's favor is better than life itself. Because thy loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. To dwell in fellowship with the Lord in his mercies is better than life at its best. What would your best life be? You've heard of people who are living their best life. I know that's Brian when the cleaning is finished. Or maybe that's Jack when all the fires are put out. Or maybe that's Tucker when he's feeling really well. But what David is saying here is that to dwell in fellowship with the Lord in his mercies is better than life itself. Even if he had 1,000 lives, that would not be equal to life with God now. And not only does this Old Testament saint testify of this, the New Testament gives us the example of the Apostle Paul, who says, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." And then the fourth way that he thirsts after the Lord is conclusively. Verse 4, you'll see this verse begins with the word thus. And that is a statement of his conclusion. And so he does so in praise. This is the expression of his devotion. Thus will I bless thee while I live. And his body is included. It shares in his expression of praise. Lifting up his hands in thy name. So this isn't to be confused with charismatic emotionalism. This is simply the praise of David. He does so conclusively. Then in verse 5, we're brought to this new word that characterizes David's devotion in seeking the Lord. It's the word satisfied. My soul shall be satisfied. So he thirsts. And now he says that same part of him that experienced thirst, if you look in verse 1, my soul thirsteth for thee. Now in verse 5, he says it is that same part of him that is now satisfied. So now he is at rest. He has a quietness of his soul. He is at peace. And that is illustrated with this expression in verse 5, my soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness. So if that was on the menu for supper tomorrow night, how would you feel? Would you be excited? Some good marrow tonight. And it's got some fatness on it too. How about that? So these expressions leave us with wondering about David's diet. It doesn't sound very appetizing. These two words, this expression, marrow and fatness, are talking about the richest nutrition. All that is so good. Have you ever had that time when you've thought about the Lord or way that he's answered prayer and you've just been brimming full of the Lord is so good. The Lord is so amazing. That's the satisfaction that David experiences here. He says of the Lord, all that is so good, and my mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips. So not only does he speak of his satisfaction by illustrating it, he speaks of his satisfaction by the way he expresses it. And he expresses it in three ways. He expresses it, number one in verse 5, with joy. His praise is with joyful lips. Number 2, he expresses it in verse 6, in his solitary meditation. His solitary meditation when he's on his bed and in the night watches. The idea of the night watches are those hours of the clock that moves so slowly when you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. You check your clock and it's 5 past. You check your clock again, it's 20 past. You check your clock again, oh, it's only 5 past. David says that in those restless times in the night and when he is on his bed alone, it's at that time, those times when there's slow progress of the hours during of the night, that's the time that he expresses his satisfaction in the Lord. And if you look in verse 7, there he says there are two reasons for this. He gives the reasons for this meditation, and though his wakeful hours he can't get to sleep, he is meditating on this and in the night watches. Firstly, what the Lord has done to help him. Because thou hast been my help. Has the Lord ever been a help to you? This was what David meditated upon. And then also, not only do you have his experience in the past, you also have his statement, his hope for the future. You'll notice that he says, therefore, in the shadow of thy wings will I rejoice. And it's the shadow of thy wings. The Lord does not have wings. He is not a winged being. This is speaking of him as a parent bird shelters its young. And so going forward, he's meditating on this, how the Lord, just with his wings, would cover him and protect him. And then in verse 8, there is a third way that this is expressed. It's expressed with praise, with joyful lips. It's expressed in his solitary meditation, and then in verse 8, it is expressed in his persistence. My soul followeth hard after thee, thy right hand upholdeth me. And there's two sides to this. There's David going hard after the Lord. He's not going to be turned aside to other helps. He is pursuing you, Lord. And then the second part to this is the one who is enabling him to do this. It's the Lord's right hand that holds him fast. So you've got this double picture. David is persisting in his relationship with the Lord, and he's holding on to the Lord, but it's the Lord that's holding on to him. Just as you hold on to the Lord, and he holds on to you. And there are other scriptures that say this. Draw nigh unto God, and he will draw nigh unto you. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Why? Because it is God that worketh in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. And then the third section, verses 9 through 11. We don't find the word defense. But verses 9 through 11 would be summarized by that word. But those that seek my soul to destroy it. David's thirsting and David's satisfaction, they are not happening in a vacuum. What else is happening in David's life? He's being chased by someone. That is right. David has enemies, those who seek his soul to destroy it. His ever-present enemies who look and work for his soul's destruction. his devotion, his thirsting, and his satisfaction in the Lord isn't happening alone. There are those who seek his soul. Just as your thirsting for the Lord and satisfaction in the Lord are not happening in a vacuum. You have the flesh as your enemy. James chapter 4, verse 5. You have the world as your enemy. James chapter 4, verse 4. And you have the devil as your enemy. James chapter 4, verse 7. And there are two things that David refers to in his devoted thirsting. As he reflects on his circumstances, these lead him to think about the Lord. And there's just one detail before we look at those two things. In verse 11, David refers to himself as the king. And David was not the king when he was being pursued by Saul. Do you know of any other times that... That's right. When Absalom was pursuing him. And I will read it to you, but if you'd like to write down a cross-reference or turn there yourself to 2 Samuel chapter 15. So this records the time when Absalom's treason resulted in David having to flee from Jerusalem. 2 Samuel 15, verse 23. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over the king, so that's David, also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. And there are two other cross-references that would be helpful to fill out this picture. 2 Samuel chapter 17 and verse 22. Then David arose and all the people that were with him, and they passed over Jordan by the morning light. There lacked not one of them that was not gone over Jordan. So this wilderness is on the other side of Jordan. And that same chapter, 2 Samuel 17, verse 29, refers to it again as a wilderness. And so it speaks there of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and how they brought provisions for David and those who were fugitives running from Absalom. It says in verse 29, "And honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat, for they said, the people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness." So that gives us the background then. There were those who were seeking David's soul to destroy it. And it was against that backdrop that David thirsts and finds his satisfaction in the Lord. But there are two things that David refers to in his devoted thirsting. There's a reality to this in his relationship with the Lord. Number one, he trusts in the justice of God. So, "But those that seek my soul to destroy it shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for foxes." The Lord is going to take care of them. And that expression, "they'll be a portion for foxes," the idea is that once they have been defeated, the scavengers will leave nothing left. They're going to eat. They're going to consume their carcasses. It's an awful picture. But he is trusting in the Lord and the justice of the Lord. Romans chapter 2, verse 6 says that the Lord will render to every man according to his deeds. And then he also, verse 11, he trusts in the purpose of God. "But the king shall rejoice in God." So do you remember where David was at this point? He had gone over what river?
Jordan.
And he was in the wilderness because Absalom had, in his treason, he had taken the throne. So what do you think about David's claim to be the king at this point? On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put it? In his circumstances, is he the king? Maybe I shouldn't have put a scale of 1 to 10 on it. That just complicates things. His circumstances would suggest his throne was in jeopardy. But in spite of the circumstances in which he fled from the threat of Absalom, the devotion of David and his thirsting after God reasserts the Lord's purpose for him. The king shall rejoice in God. He reasserts the Lord's purpose. His purpose and his hope is well founded. If his hope is well founded in God's purpose, how much more is the New Testament believer's hope well founded? Our assurance is based on better promises and greater assurance that I shall not be dismayed. In 1984, Gabby Anderson, it's a difficult last name to pronounce, S-C-H-I-E-S, Scheiss, Gabby Anderson Scheiss, was the first woman to run for Switzerland in the women's marathon. It was held in Los Angeles in 30 degree temperatures and high humidity. At that time, the Olympic standard only allowed for 5 watering stations on that 42-kilometer run. Gabby missed her 5th watering station, and she entered into the stadium where the last lap would be run, staggering, severely dehydrated. Her torso was twisted and she was flinging her left arm widely. I mean, it's all recorded still for that first women's marathon. When people came to help her, they saw that she was in distress. She pushed them away because if anybody helped her, she would be disqualified. And even though she had run the other 42 kilometers in an almost record time, it took her 5 minutes and 44 seconds to run the last 400 meters, staggering as she went. So I'm wondering today about how I am running. Am I running well? Am I running my race as I should? Perhaps I should be asking, how am I dealing with the thirsting of my soul? You and I should know where to come and drink. There are many like the woman at the well who are thirsting. They know not for what, but you do. And so, like David, can I encourage you to do so early, to make it a priority, to claim the day, to make it the primary object of your devotion, not pleasing yourself, not going after other pleasures. And to thirst for the Lord so as you have seen him in the sanctuary. Maybe you have fond memories of happier days, but now is the time that we should be thirsting after the Lord, going to him to be satisfied, drinking at that fountain. And he does so because God's favor is better than life itself. God's favor should be better than anything else in our lives. And he does so conclusively. Thus will I bless him while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. Let's pray, please.